King Wave, Fox, Beer, Locus, acting very weird. Captain Pike, Sisko's wife, Klingons and the afterlife. Boimler, Tendi's dog, Ransom is very hot. Four Drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. Teacher, bad left, Edward is an idiot. Spock is dead, Worf is wed, Chekhov's wearing red. Data's cat, Kim Peck's cat, Q has had enough of that. Beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go.
We talk about the series. You can join us live by picking up your phone now. We talk about the series. We're coming to you on the streaming services now. We talk about the series.
Well, good evening, Trekkies and Trekkers around the globe. It is Thursday, April 11th, 2024. It is 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 4:30 Pacific Time, which means we are live, which means you can let your fingers do the walking and call Trek Talking right now. 646-668-2433 is our number. We would love to hear from you. We have got a great show for you tonight. Of course, every show is a great show, but this one is even better because we're talking about Star Trek Discovery. And dare I say, it's been a year and a half.
It's been
since
a
we
long
talked about
while.
It's been a long road getting from there to here, I can tell you that. We are going to be talking about Star Trek Discovery. So if you'd like to talk about Star Trek Discovery tonight, give us a call, 646-668-2433. We'll get you on the line. But before we go too far, I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, and I want to go around and see what's going on with my Trekspurts. We'll start off in Las Vegas with our very own Charles. How you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm hanging in there. It was a bit of a rough day today with a lockdown nearby my school. But the weather's warm. Would have been nice to get out there and see it, but ready to talk to Rick.
Yep, I hear you. And we're going to swing out to Portland where we have our very own Eric. How you doing tonight, Eric?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I have had a one of those weeks where, like, you realize suddenly it's Thursday night and you have no idea how you got here because it all just was a blur. But you know, I'll go with Charles. The weather here right now is nice. My neighbor is mowing, so if you hear any mowing sounds, you know, that's my neighbor just taking care of business.
Well, that's better than if you hear snowblower sounds, like, outside my window, so... That's
well, snowblower is no fun at all, for sure. And I will say the close cousin of the snowblower, the leaf blower, is my least favorite yard tool of all time. So
yeah.
Sorry if you like leaf blowers. Down with leaf blowers, boo.
And also out in Portland, we have our very own David the Donut Guy. How you doing, David?
Do you guys hear that? I don't think I hear any sound over my end. So there's nothing outside my window, but, you know.
Nothing but
nobody trying to steal your donut.
No, well, maybe the squirrel. That's about it. But yeah,
the squirrels. All right, guys. So we are live with you right now. You can find all of our shows at trektalking.com. You can go there and there's articles and you can see pictures of us and you can link to our Facebook page from there. And our Facebook address is Trek Talking Podcast. That is our Facebook address, Trek Talking Podcast. And if you go there, you'll see pinned to the top of the page, a Live Long and Prosper saying, hey, dude, where are you listening to us from? And all you got to do is drop us a line, kind of leave some emojis and stuff because Uncle Jim likes those. And then look for a heart next to your name from yours truly. If you do see that, then you're going to be featured on a future fan shout out. So, Eric, would you like to get us started on our fan shout-out segment?
I absolutely would. We're going to spin that globe and head to South Africa, where we're saying hello today to Lizinda Muller, who's checking in with us all the way from the tip of that continent. Thanks so much for saying hello, Lizinda, and we appreciate your support. Thanks for being along for the ride. Andrea Neher-Ziffer is saying hello to us from Germany, specifically that North Rhine-Westphalia region, city of Krefeld. That is an area next to the Rhine River there that I would love to go. I have some friends who live in that region. So, Andrea, thank you so much for carrying that Trek Talking Torch out there where you live in that beautiful country. We're also saying hello this week to Barbara Mead. Barbara Mead is saying hello to us from Western New Brunswick up in Canada, central location for the total solar eclipse on April 8th. I wonder if you all were charging $700 for your hotels that night. I'll be wearing my Star Trek uniforms for the week leading up to it. Now, can I dress as a Vulcan and not laugh? Ooh, that would be tough. I like to laugh, so I don't think I'd make a very good Vulcan. Thanks, Barbara. Thanks for listening to us, and thanks for being a friend just across the border. I have a lot of friends up there in Canada, and it's nice to know we know somebody in New Brunswick. And finally, on my specific list here, we've got Christine Elliott checking in with us, flying that Union Jack proudly, as well as that Live Long and Prosper symbol. Send hello from Cornwall over in the UK. I was just over in London not too long ago. I love, love, love the UK. I would totally live there. Not specifically been to Cornwall. Now I have another destination. Thanks, Christine, for saying hello to us. Charles, I think you're going to bring it back to America's heartland, not too far from where I grew up, actually.
All right. Thanks, Rick. Let's welcome to Stefan Lewick from Wisconsin. So you going to bring us cheese, Stefan?
Hello, Wisconsin!
Welcome to Joe Vix from Alaska. Oh, it's getting warmer up there for you. Oh. Welcome, Douglas Todd from Cleveland, Ohio. And also welcome to Brian Cross from Casper, Wyoming. Dead on your list.
Yeah, I would like to give a warm welcome to Roy Jackson from Louisiana. Next on my list is Brian Alexander from Elyria, Ohio. Or Elyria? I'm not sure how to pronounce that. But
I think Elyria. Yeah, I'll go with Elyria.
Okay. welcome. And next is Christina Spears from Iowa. Last on my list is Barrett Samble from Southwest Pennsylvania. And I would swing this over to next, which is going to be back to Eric.
Yeah, tonight I get Paul's slot for the moment till he joins us in a little bit. Julia Magyar, we're saying hello to you. And you say that you are originally from Hungary, and you show us that Hungarian flag as well as that Live Long and Prosper. But now you're living in Greece, and you also fly that Greek flag. So thank you so much for saying hello to us from Greece with your proud Hungarian heritage. You know, Itik, man, infinite diversity is what it takes to really make a Star Trek crowd, and we really appreciate your support on the podcast. Thank you so much, Julia. Hello as well this week to Callum McDonald, saying hello from Stornoway, Outer Hebrides in Scotland. I was telling my, I don't know how you feel about this, Callum, hopefully you're down with this, but I was telling my daughter the other day about that old Saturday Night Live skit. If it's not Scottish, it's crap. And we had a lot of fun with that. So I believe that your country has so many cool things about it that if I lived there, I might say, if it's not Scottish, it's crap. Thank you, Callum McDonald, for supporting our podcast over there. Hello as well this week, spinning back over to South Africa, believe it or not, to Sheldon Elgenbrecht, who's saying hello to us from the great city of Johannesburg. A lot of history in that city, and I see you're proudly flying that South African flag. Thank you so much for supporting our podcast from down there. And last but not least on this list, we're saying hello to Rebecca Gonzalez Gutierrez, who's saying hello from Madrid, Spain, with that Live Long and Prosper symbol. I'm trying to convince my kid to study abroad in Madrid so that I've got a really good reason to go there and spend enormous amounts of time, Rebecca. You can imagine why. So thanks for supporting our podcast. And Jim, I would love to know who you want to say hello to and how many of them are in New York.
Well, we want to say hello and thank you to Jeff Fuller, who's listening to us in Maine. We want to also say hello and thank you to TJ Green, Ticonderoga, New York, home of the Star Trek Original Set Tour. Unfortunately, TJ is no longer with us due to a terrible incident that occurred up in Ticonderoga. So rest in peace, TJ. We also want to say thank you to Brian Cross, who's listening to us in Casper, Wyoming. And last but definitely not least on our list, we want to say kapla to Christy Cummings, who's listening to us in Southern California. All right, guys, that wraps up our fan shout-outs. If you want to head over to our Facebook page, Truck Talking Podcast, every Friday, which will be tomorrow, I will put up a post asking you guys, our Facebook fans, to score this week's episode. And like I said, we are a week behind. So the episode which is on today is the one we're going to be talking about next Thursday. And that's the episode that I'll be posting tomorrow on our Facebook page, okay? So all you have to do is go there and let us know what you thought about the episode. And then we collect the scores and we give it back to you guys. So, Eric, what did our Facebook fans have to say about Red Directive?
Well, Kevin Joseph gave it an 8. He said, I'd give Red Directive an 8. Just nice and simple. So pretty good score there. Jennifer Meyer said, love it, a 10. Hauk Fisher gave it an 11, which, of course, unfortunately, Hauk, we do have to average down to a 10. But, you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles. David Worthy said, solid start, action-oriented. Good use of new and legacy characters, intriguing hook with nods to greater canon. As always, visually appealing. That's a 9. Robert C. Twining gave it a 7, room for improvement. For me, the soundtrack and pacing were uneven. I also think that they would benefit from a little less screen time devoted to character reactions to thoughtful statements and long goodbyes and long hellos. I get that we are in episode 2, setting stage for character arcs and a flourishing finish, but there is genius in restraint or subtlety. Take the scene with Burnham and her new number 1. That is a pivotal tone-setting scene. My taste would have been to contrast the emotional goodbyes with Saru to a heroic, but more matter-of-fact surprise, I'm paying my second chance forward to you, to that grumpy, sulky man looking out longingly at Discovery. I think Sonequa Martin-Green is capable of conveying an entire movie's plot on her own with only emotional facial expressions. We are nowhere near hug friends yet, especially in an episode with so many scenes that more defensibly require emotional exchanges. We can say profound things and let the audience feel it by themselves, but I'm no movie maker, and I'm sure if I tried, I would be terrible. Anyway, I still liked it, and I had it had awesome special effects. They used the ships to stop an avalanche. Never seen that before. That was a great review, Robert. Thank you so much for that. Zef Shredders gave it a 2. Tacking on a TNG Easter egg to the usual high-action nonsense of Disco doesn't make it interesting. Leslie Hoffman gave it a 10. Hi, Leslie. Top fan Daniel Brown gave it a 9, but I was so jacked up and sad at the same time. Yeah, Dan, I get you. Dan Campbell said he gave it an 8. The action scenes and graphics were very good. The storyline got too slow and mundane at times. And Fern Garcia gave it the old 11. The entire episode is a great start for the final season. At times, I thought I was watching a movie. The premise and the action sequences are outstanding and some of Trek's best yet. And that, you guys, averages us down to a fan score, a combined fan score of 8.3 this week. Very respectable.
Very respectable. So who wants to jump in and get started with Star Trek Discovery Red Directive? We'll see how close we come to the fans. Okay.
Why don't you kick it off, Charles?
I was going to say, Jim, I still got cadets for both episodes.
Okay.
So soundtrack theme.
Oh, there we go. We'll go with a triple this week.
All right. Well, I got quite a few for this one. This is an interesting one. Okay. Captain Rayner. Interesting is a Kelrum, which we met in DS9 Armageddon game, Season 2, Episode 13. Fred, we learn back about synths in Picard Season 1. Also in Picard Season 1, we learned about Alton Sung. Also, somebody mentioned about TNG. Well, we got Dr. Velik, which is a Romulan, and the progenitors all came from TNG's The Chase, Season 6, Episode 20. So that's it for the cadet training for this episode. Oh, and forgot to mention one for David. Did anybody notice what was in the hallway when Burnham and Booker were walking through the hallway?
We played that sound clip.
Yes. There was a single treble that fell off the wall.
So can we just talk about that? Because we were bringing it up, can we just talk about that treble for a second? So the treble is just, like, hanging out in the corridor. Is that treble a crew member? Like, what's going on there?
I think he's just a runaway pet.
If it's a single treble, are they able to control them now?
Maybe that was Edward.
Well, and have we seen him, like, climb a wall like that? But, like, that thing was literally clinging to something that was upside down. I mean, first of all, let's just give props to the way that however they made that happen worked. I don't know if it was CGI or if it was some sort of remote control thing, but the way that it, like, dropped down on the ground and then rolled up into a ball and sort of, like, rolled away was so cool. I just thought it was really neat.
Well, the tribbles are known to collapse onto things and roll around surfaces, including walls, so I figured it was just something that they used to do.
The
minute I saw that, I thought of David.
Awesome.
right
I'm
away,
glad to be remembered as a furry tribble. That's all I gotta say.
Yes. Oh.
There are worse things.
Yeah. So, all right. So I gotta say that, first of all, thank God we're talking about Star Trek Discovery. It has been so long, and it's so nice to have Star Trek back again. So thank you so much for that. But I think they could have picked a better episode to base this whole season on, because The Chief is kind of like one I keep it. And it's kind of like a rehash of, like, of Alien with, you know, with the engineers and stuff. And I was like, I mean, I don't know. I wasn't too thrilled with that aspect of it. So I just wanted to get that out of the way. That being said, though, God, I loved this episode. All right.
You're like, the premise is terrible, but man, the episode was amazing.
I thought it was great that they came right out with all guns blazing, and they laid out the premise. And by the end of the second episode, that we knew where they were going, what they were doing, who the main protagonists were. Everything was already laid out for us. So we already know where they're going to be going and what they're going to be doing and what's happening in the episode. So that's all been answered already. So now we can just sit back and enjoy the character moments. Boy, were there some great character moments in this episode. I love the Burnham-Saru relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of Kirk and Spock all the way. In fact, I'm probably going to get hate mail, but I actually think that the Burnham-Saru relationship might be better than the Kirk and Spock relationship, because we've seen them go through so much more, and I just love that relationship.
I will say, Jim, that it definitely fits better with today's kind of sensibilities, right? Like, it's not just a relationship based on, like, manly friendship and, like, a wartime buddies kind of way that Kirk and Spock were. They have a deeper relationship, Saru and Michael do, in that they, like, have shared all this trauma, but, like, we've watched their conversations with one another. We've watched them cry on each other's shoulder. We've watched them advise each other. We've watched them hate each other along the way. So it's just, like, been a really deeper experience than I think TOS, you know, through no fault of its own, just wasn't able to explore at the time. It just wasn't, like, the world wasn't ready for that, right? I think Roddenberry would have done it, like, if he, not to invoke Roddenberry, but, like, I think he'd be down with, like, the keeping up with the times and, like, changing things and making sure that, you know, emotions are actually honored in these shows, for example.
Well, you know, I think back to when Saru asked Burnham to cut off his ganglia and basically end his life, and it's just some powerful stuff there, and I love their relationship. I also love the relationship between Saru and Tarina, and I'm really psyched
My favorite.
To see where that.
I love it.
You know, I want to see where that is going. Rainer reminds me of the
dipshit Captain from Chicago, right?
Chicago. And you know, I really like that character. I think he's gonna surprise us in the end. So that was great. And like one of our viewers said, the special effects were top notch in the episode all the way through. And we saw a Tribble, you know, and, you know, they're setting up the whole Tilly at the Academy thing. And I really liked seeing Adira again. And when Book shows up and Culber goes and gives him a hug and says to him, "How are you doing?" And Book says, "Oh, I'm helping the refugees." And he says, "That's what are you doing?" I said, "How are you doing?" And that just emphasizes, you know, Culber's, you know,
his role as that. Yeah.
Yeah. So all the way around, I thought this was we didn't see Jet Reno, and I hope we see her again. At some point,
we heard a story about Jet Reno because we found out that is how Saru got his that might not be in this episode, but that's how Saru got his nickname, Action Saru.
Yeah, Action Saru.
Yeah, are we talking about both episodes today? Or?
Yeah, well, we're talking. Yeah, we'll talk about the second one in a minute.
One at a time. Yeah, sorry. Okay. I mean, gotta try not to cross.
I'm not spoiling anything, but one of your previous hosts said to keep an eye on Reno's uniform tonight. So she's back in episode 3.
Whoa,
she's gonna
okay.
be back. And I also thought it was great to see Grudge again. When Michael Burnham
yes.
brings her out,
she's
oh, Grudge is like, I ain't got time for that. You know,
that's not a trouble.
No,
yeah, that's not
that is a clean.
So, you know, and Kovich is back, of course, being as elusive as ever. And Avril Vance, who's always good when he's on screen. So all the way around, I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed this episode. And watching Star Trek Discovery again was such a thrill that I'm going to go with a 9 on this one for me, personally.
Right,
so who wants to jump in next?
You want to go, Charles?
You want to take it, Charles?
Go ahead, Eric, because I'm still trying to get some of the data on this. Can go.
All right. Well, so, you know, I agree with most of what Jim said. I think that I really did enjoy the character moments like you did, you know, the little pairings that they give us. There's quite a few of those. It was kind of interesting because aside from that opening scene where they, you know, Michael Burnham's on top of the ship, trying to cut the engines off, and then we sort of get the 4 hours later, and then later we catch back up to that. I mean, that's high intensity. But aside from that, the opening of the show is primarily these, like, character interactions with one another and them sort of checking in with each other. I'm glad you said something about Saru and Tarina because, of course, they've been one of my favorite couples since they were introduced. I just think they're, like, perfect for one another, and I love the fact that Saru is actually – moving on to this sort of ambassadorial role that feels like a very logical move to me. So I like that in terms of his character development. I will say that, so this is the episode with the sand bikes, right?
Yeah.
And not jumping
yeah.
ahead. Okay. Let's talk about the sand bikes. So the whole scene with the sand bikes and them kind of like shouting an entire conversation to each other while they're riding on the sand bikes, going through the desert, running away from the avalanche. I don't know, man. There was something about that scene that I just didn't dig. It kind of like took away from, I don't know if it was believability. It just wasn't that interesting to me. It just kind of felt like action fodder, you know, and okay, we're going to throw in 10 minutes worth of super action, and it's not going to advance the plot at all. It's not going to tell us anything about the characters. It's just going to be kind of fun because, you know, because Dune came out this year and everybody's thinking about deserts. I don't know. So anyway, that was one of my least favorite parts of the episode was that particular scene. So I've given you a favorite now, which is the character interactions. I've given you my least favorite, which is the scene, the desert stuff. Let's talk about the villains real quick. So we've got two new villains, Maul and Locke, which I can't help but think of as Moloch, which is, you know, as many people will know, like, you know, Marvel, evil people guy. So anyway, why they chose those names to make them sound like Moloch, I don't know if they did that on purpose. And if they didn't do it on purpose, then somebody should have caught that. And it's distracting because every time I hear their two names together, I have to like translate back to the fact that they're the bad guys from the season. Now let's talk about them as bad guys. Okay. You got the woman, you got the dude who when he first changes and takes his helmet off, doesn't he have like transparent kind of like weird jelly skin something going on? Can't you kind of see through it?
I thought he was kind of like Vadic in Picard is what he reminded me of.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, sure. The whole transparent, that was super cool. Like when he took his helmet off and you kind of saw his face sort of morph as he, I think was like maybe adapting to the atmosphere he was breathing or something. I mean, that was pretty cool. Yeah. You know, are they particularly compelling as bad guys? I don't know. I guess it depends on where they take them after the second episode. Up to the first episode here, I've kind of been like, oh, it's a couple weird pirate people. Why should I be particularly interested in these guys aside from the fact that they happen to get their hands on the main theme for the season, which was the puzzle box and what's in the puzzle box. And I'm not going to take everything. So I'm going to let Charles and David talk about what's in the puzzle box and like that main part of the story. So to cut my review off on that one, let's say that I would give this one I didn't come away from it like, damn, I really want to watch that episode again. I came away from it with like, I'll watch it again in a week. So I'm going to give it a 7.5. 7.5 from me.
How about you, David?
Well, this one kind of disappointed me. I was hoping for a little bit more oomph. I do have to agree, the cinematics of the whole Discovery season in general is really good. It really does feel like a movie. I do like the artwork of all the different types of like scenery that they got going on. But to me, this episode just felt a little awkward. I don't know. That whole scene with Tilly in that room when she was supposedly drunk with Andorian ale or whatever, it just didn't resonate with me for some odd reason. It just felt really awkward. I was like, really? What? Is that what's going on? So, I don't know.
Was there supposed to be some kind of, like, romantic interaction with the dude there going on? Is that what was happening there?
I think she's got a crush on him. And she's in trouble expressing his feelings, and I'm not sure. He either doesn't realize it or he has trouble expressing his.
Okay.
Yeah. So that scene I didn't get very well. I thought it was just a little strange. And it just seemed a little slow to me, that whole situation. So I don't know. That was probably my least favorite part of the entire episode. But to me, I think that instance when Eric was talking about the sand bikes, the reason why they could – are you talking about, like, could they hear each other very well? Is that what you were comparing?
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that the whole scene – like, the very end of the scene and the way they resolved it with the two ships, I'll let somebody else talk about that, but that was freaking dope. But, like, the actual fact of them – like, was it believable to have them having this, like, puzzle-solving conversation while they're speeding on these bikes? It really, to me – like, of all the scenes that have cool special effects and that are framed really well and that are filmed really well, those felt like they were sitting on a stationary bike somewhere with like a fan blowing wind in their hair, and they were delivering their lines.
I don't know if you guys watched Will Wheaton, episode. They talked about the AI wall that they used for that scene.
Oh, okay.
So that was actually an actual, I don't know, a computer-generated scene.
Yeah.
But other than that, I thought you were talking about, like, you thought it was unbelievable because they could hear each other over the bikes and everything. I was going to say because they had radio earpieces.
The technical part of the, could they hear each other? It was more like, did I find that scene interesting or anything? And I don't know. The sand bikes, maybe they should have shown me a little bit more how the sand bikes worked or something. Like, maybe they're a really they just look like cheap motorcycles, and then the avalanche thing was a little, I didn't love it. Anyway, but the end part was amazing.
Okay, no, that's fine. I was just wondering, because I was like, oh, that probably explained why they couldn't hear each other, but anyway. So, okay, so that was that. Also, we forgot to mention Data, or Data 2.0. So what did you guys think of
that? I was going to talk about that, because I love the Culver's investigating him and find his serial number, and the discussion of that being an old Android. And I thought it interesting that it dated back to the Alton Soon era.
Yeah, I mean, he said, so the Android Fred said that he remembered something about 600 and something years ago. So we know that
627.7 or something like that.
Was it? Okay, yeah. So we know that he's like at least 600 years old, which would put it a couple of 150 years past like TNG. I guess what we're saying is that
it puts us probably just past Picard. Season 1.
Just past Picard. So we have a Soji style android at this point, but this guy looks like Data with the off-colored skin and stuff. So I wonder if that is not like because he had to be built that way, but because it was a fashion choice or something. You know,
this is what my theory is. He was actually built by Noonien Chun or Alton Chun or whatever his name was. I think he was kind of like a Data 2.0 just in case, like, Lore or Data didn't work. And so he was around during the whole situation. Because just because he said he was, like, he hasn't seen one of these in, like, 600 or so years doesn't mean that he was created then. He was living probably way before then. So he was probably running around the whole TNG era, would be my guess, because being an android...
I don't think so.
You do
have... He's a brother. He's a cousin or a brother.
Something like that, but the fact that he looks exactly like Data would make it sound like this was Alton Chun's version of what Noonien Chun created. So, I mean, just like father like son, right? You know, you're just going following the footsteps and then not getting everything exactly right, but yeah. To me, that looks just like Data, and I think he was a Data 2.0. But here's the thing. Do people think he's dead? I don't think he's dead. You can't just kill an android like that. I mean, you can always restart him back up, I suppose, but still. So we're going to be seeing more of Fred, I believe, later on in the series.
Yeah. Well,
there
were comments about this character and people questioning when he's going to return.
Yeah.
And that is a possibility that we could see Fred come back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, yeah, Fred was interesting. I don't know if it means for anything or if it's like an abbreviation for F-R-E-D. I don't know, but...
First residential... Yeah, whatever. Yeah, maybe Fred is an acronym.
Electronic droid.
That'd be cool. I am.
Anyways. But, so to me, I did like this whole idea of the Data coming back, even though it wasn't Brent Spiner, which is fine. I think this guy did an excellent job of playing an android. And to me, this episode, you said that the two ships crash landing in the the sand to prevent the avalanche. I actually did not like that one bit. I was like, really? They did that? They actually literally crash landed into the sand.
Well, they did the generations thing, but they did it with shields up.
I know, but it's you're literally. What about all those poor people in the front of the ship? They just completely dark over there.
Inertial dampeners, man. Inertial dampeners. They're fine.
I don't know, but it's working against gravity. I mean, it's fine. it just didn't make sense to me. And I was like, oh my goodness. So yeah, that to me it didn't really work well with me. So yeah, this particular episode just felt so strange to me. But yeah.
What's your number?
In the background.
What's your number?
My number. Okay, I'm giving this a 5.5.
Woo! Wow,
yeah.
David, you usually like everything. Oh my gosh.
Great.
Brutal.
Wow, you're the new Paul.
Hacked it, yeah.
Wow.
Right, Charles. Let's see what you can do.
As Eric's saying, I'll save it for other people. We don't have any other people unless Paul makes it. So... I'm hearing some music in the background. Not sure what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay. A couple of scenes we've stopped discussing. Okay, let's start off with that scene with Michael in a suit flying the back of the ship trying to get into its hold. I thought that was a fun scene. I thought that was a really good scene of, okay, we've never seen somebody try this before. Okay, I can see it being a possibility of being done. Our astronauts can do spacewalks outside the ships. Well, they're doing some pretty good action outside their ships.
Yeah, as long as they're in the warp bubble. I mean, I think that's what we haven't seen is people on the hull of the ship while they're at warp. And this was kind of like, we got to see not only that, but we got to see another ship tractor beaming another ship at warp.
Yep. You got diminishing abilities.
Let's not forget, which I'm surprised no one mentioned yet, unless
well, Charles isn't done yet. Charles isn't done
okay.
yet. But you can bring it up.
Okay, What have we mentioned, Jim?
Well, when the episode first starts and they're having Federation Day, and Stamets is the person of honor because the spore drive has been completely discontinued, and now they're going to install pathway drives on all of the starships. What the hell is a pathway drive?
Well, I mean, I would bet you that it is a similar technology to like the Protostar, where it's like a slipstream style thing. Mm. You know, Pathfinder was the thing from Voyager that was the research vessel. You know, the Dauntless had a different type of slipstream engine, and the Pathfinder program was what was trying to bring the Voyager back. So there was definitely research into other, you know, faster than warp technologies going on, at least at the end of Voyager, for sure. So presumably some of those got developed. I'm sure that I bet if we went back and listened, remember when they started talking about the burn and they talked about all the different types of technologies that they tried to develop after all the dilithium blew up? And I wonder if Pathfinder was in one of those, or if it's a dilithium-based one. I'm not sure.
Well, I'm wondering if maybe it's a non-dilithium-based system.
Yeah.
So they don't have to depend on dilithium.
It's true, but now the Federation is rife with dilithium as well, so, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry I interrupted, Charles. You can continue.
Oh, you're fine. That's okay, because I was going to catch on the other subject we didn't really talk much about. And that's the part of the story. We get to meet an 800-year-old mummy. This episode got me interested. It's like, okay, the chase. I went back and watched the chase. This is the one where Picard gets visited by an old professor, archaeologist. who tries to convince him to go join him on an archaeology dig. So they do the dig, and he wants to do the dig, and Picard doesn't want to go, and then the process, the doctor is killed. And Picard goes in off on his own with the ship and goes researching this and finds out it's a communication with this higher species that does look a little bit like
changelings.
Changelings. It's got the same look as a changeling, but it's not a changeling. But that in this series, that's in TNG, didn't give them a name. In this series, we did get the name Progenitors. But I thought it was so interesting that the last person that speaks to after, because we had Cardassians, Romulans, Klingons, the Federation. There, I think all of them. And they all end up on the planet threatening each other. Well, the last person that speaks to Picard is a Romulan and saying that he believes that all beings are slightly related by DNA and that maybe at one point that could be true. And then we find out this Romulan, therefore after, has done the research and has the information about it. So I thought that was an interesting tie-in to TNG and extending that into the future to see what direction that goes. I thought it was interesting about Rainer. I kept looking at his ears like, okay, he doesn't act. He's not Vulcan. And it took me, it's like, I'm confused what he is. So a little bit of research finding out he's a Kellyrum run. I'm not sure the exact pronunciation, but it's definitely a new.
I think it's pronounced Carillion.
Yeah, Carillion.
Okay, Carillion. Though it's the first time we've really, though we've dealt with him before. And I didn't look at the episode, so I didn't get a good look at that species. But we get a return of that species coming in later. So I like what they did with that. And I'm going to give the episode the same as Jim and not. Because I really
and
enjoyed
that,
this episode.
That brings us around to Paul. You got
hey,
the Paul
dude.
Up the boost, buddy. We're talking about Red Direction.
How's it going, man? Sorry to be joining late today. So apologies for that. But unavoidable.
Just in time.
Okay. Is my audio okay? Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
We can.
Okay. And are we just, if I understand, we're just doing the first of the two episodes from the premiere night, right? Just the first one. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And you just want me to kind of give it an overview kind of a deal, what
yeah.
I thought? Or is that?
Yeah.
Okay. Great. I'll try to be brief. Of these two episodes, I'll save my thoughts for the second one in a bit because we're going to talk about that as well, I think, right? Is it the next?
Yes.
Yeah. I did not care for the first episode very much. A lot of it to me is just the style of writing, right? And the style of the dialogue was a little awkward for me. And it's just they really want badly to try to make the episodes, especially when it's a premiere, I think, feel as cinematic as possible, right? And they're really – it's like somebody who's adding giant handfuls of salt to, like, the stew they're making, right? It's a little much, right? I find it really crazy that because right out of the gate, they lost me with this whole business of having Captain Burnham basically surfing on the ship that they're pursuing while it's at warp, that was just, you know, I mean, we saw something similar in Prodigy not that long ago, right? But that was conveyed, you know, very similar dynamic in terms of like the way the set piece was constructed, but that was somehow much more believable, the way that was done in that particular episode. I don't know if anyone else remembers that, but or I hope I didn't dream it, but that's what I'm remembering. But I just found it preposterous. I mean, it was just seemed really, it just, all of my suspension of disbelief was yanked out there because it just seemed ludicrous that that would be something that anyone could ever explain away. You know, and again, it's just, it kind of flies in the face of the perspective that we always had on like Next Gen, right? Hey, the idea is that the captain is too valuable to be exposed to be doing this stuff, right? But in this case, the captain is like, you know, Burnham's just, she's changed so much as a character. Now she's like wailing about her saxophone lessons that she's going to miss. And she's, you know, trying to be funny. And she's like, just cavalierly, suicidally reckless, right? It's just hard to believe. And it just, for me, it takes me out of the believability of the story, right? It's like the same thing as like when suddenly somebody gets a great idea to take both ships and for some reason crash them saucer section first into the ground. That I don't think
we're
playing in a way that I ever bought. It's like if we crash the saucer, but they won't crash or explode or need any maintenance or whatever. But it'll just be this cool thing with our big cinematic, you know, volume screen, and the deflector shields will be there, and it'll be okay, right? It just after a protracted, unnecessarily, preposterously long, like dirt motorcycle chase, you know, with, you know, everyone having really, have you ever tried to talk to somebody when you're riding on a motorcycle and they're having like the most extended conversations and debates and considering what to do while they're riding these sand cycles or whatever the hell they're called, right? And just ridiculous sequence. So for me, all of those things that they were trying to do to make things exciting and fun for people, you know, in a big action movie kind of way, you know, for what I would consider good sci-fi and good science fiction and good action storytelling, I just found it ludicrous and it was very difficult. There seems like they always have this propensity to have an unnecessary gun battle, all right, and leading up to the whole desert chase, there to be a big shoot-em-out, right? Guns. And it's just like we're in the 32nd century or wherever we are, and people are a bit more enlightened. Must we always have this gun, you know, thing happening? It just makes my head hurt. I like the idea of there being a some kind of a hunt that they're going on, right? A treasure chase, right? To go to do the numerous places. Feels very game-like. You know, you're going to multiple locations to get various pieces, as we see in the second episode. We'll talk about that. But I just wish that we weren't always having these kind of, you know, soap opera, space opera cliches like space pirates and smugglers and bounty hunters all the time. It is driving me nuts. And I would rather see, you know, something that makes me feel that, you know, while we're hundreds of years in the future, maybe Starfleet's a little bit more professional, not less professional. Because it just seems like they are, and a lot of my, and again, I'm talking about the first episode. You know, I have other thoughts on the second episode later on. I found it really annoying, and it just wasn't very good writing. What I did like a lot, and I think it was a really smart move for these guys, was bringing on Callum Keith Rennie as Captain Rayner, right? Definitely not a Vulcan at all. As you have to, they didn't really address it on screen. You had to go do your, you know, research, as Charles was saying earlier on, right? He's a Kelleran from, I think it was the Armageddon game episode of Deep Space Nine, right?
TNG.
You know, I think it was Deep Space Nine.
No, Armageddon game. You were right. From
was
DS9.
It Deep Space Nine? That's what I remember. Yeah, at least that's what I had seen on there. But the guy was on Battlestar Galactica forever, right? He's a terrific actor. He's really, really good. And he's got that same kind of edgy, in-your-face, kind of grizzled veteran vibe that I liked so much from the early seasons of Discovery when we had our good friend Jason Isaacs on as a regular character, right? He's got that gravitas, and he's a very intense performer. he's kind of cynical, and he just sells every scene he's in.
He's right? definitely and not he's a Cylon, right?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I hope not. I hope not. But he's a terrific actor. I don't want to say too much about what he ends up doing when we talk about the second episode. But he was like a saving grace for me. Dug him a lot. I think he's really great. He's cool. He's a badass. Definitely has that Lorca vibe, I think, you know, where he's like, this is the kind of character I'm really interested in following, right? I don't know what's going on with Tilly in this episode. She acted like she was like, you know, I know she was supposed to be drunk in that one scene, but I was just like, what's going on with her? She seems like she's really just, you know, barely holding it together, barely functional. Yeah. She just seems like very adolescent, you know. Maybe it's hanging out with the Academy cadets, but she just seemed really, you know, I'd be like, are you here to work or what is your story? You know,
yeah,
so,
it feels
so for
like
me, guys.
Paul, on that front, I feel like they brought her so far in like two or three seasons and like we saw so much character growth and then all of a sudden they just didn't know what to do with her anymore.
Hmm.
That's what it feels like in the writing to me, right?
Yeah,
like they don't
and
know how to show her as a mature person who still has like idiosyncrasies or something. I don't know. Something's off there.
It's like somebody in the writer's room said, it's like somebody in the writer's room said, hey, you're going to be the funny character. Be funny a lot. Right. And so she's kind of like, you know, ripping around, trying to do some shtick and whatever. But it doesn't seem like she's functional and she doesn't seem like she's sort of like an ensign who you probably would never promote. Right. So, I mean, that's how she comes across. I'm like, she just doesn't seem, you know, maybe she's just trying to have her relate to a particular demographic of the audience. I don't know, but it just doesn't seem to be working. And I feel bad because I'm saying all this stuff with absolutely no idea what all of you thought of the episode, but I'm pretty sure I heard Charles give it a 9. So I feel bad because, you know, it's kind of in keeping as devil's advocate for me. Sometimes I come in with these other opinions, but I'd give it a 6, a generous 6, I guess. I mean, I really don't want to give it a 6. I'd probably give it a 5, but I guess I'm a little bit more favorable towards it after seeing the second episode where you sort of get a sense of what's going on. I do have to say, too, I do like what they're doing with Saru. I do not like the nickname they gave him in the second episode, which is really infantile, but I like the performance and I like the affection they have for him being in this, changing his role, as it were. So I think that's really cool. And his relationship with his beloved is just wonderful. And I, you know, is it too much to ask for a Saru Vulcan sex scene? Can I get that at some point? Am I not going to be getting that? No. Do people not have sex in the 32nd century? I mean, I don't need to see things happening. It's just, but show them in bed together for crying out loud.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like
show
any other TV show.
Way.
Yeah, any other TV show, you know, he'd have his uniform off and he'd be hanging out and they'd be having some post-coital pillow talk, which would be lovely, and they could do that. Why are we not getting that? Is it too weird? It seems like it's, you know, an odd thing to omit, frankly. It's like any other two characters who are, you know, like any two straight characters, you'd have an obligatory, you know, we've seen it with Pike. Right, we've seen it with other characters. Why is the alien an alien thing just something we can't depict? Or maybe they're going to depict that later, but it's just mm-hmm. It seems odd to me to not do that. I think it's kind of like, you know, a little repressive.
We're a
given
little
how
too early for that.
Well,
they might,
I mean,
they might
not based on what happened in episode 2, a certain declaration that happened there. I would say no, we are not too early for that. Would be my retort, brother. But, so I'm going to give it a 6 just because there is some good stuff in there. But it's just like, man, the writing style is so not my jam in terms of, you know, the way they choose to – there is so much talking about things and so much talking about emotions that leans into practically being virtue signaling. I'm like, do we need to have dialogue that's like that? I just don't think people normally talk that way. I just don't think that that dialogue works.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll give it a 6, but, man, I was a lot more eager to talk about episode 2, and shut me up.
Well, congratulations, David. You actually beat Paul.
What?
Congratulations.
Yeah, I thought you were going to go lower than me.
David gave it
what
a 5.5.
What did you give it? What did everybody give it? Will you tell me?
So what's the total, Charles?
Okay. I'll just do summaries. With a 9, a 9, a 7.5, and a 5.5, we have an overall score of a 7.4.
Who gave 5.5?
Which is?
Me. That was David.
David.
Oh, okay. 5.5, so okay. And what, Eric, what did you give
which
it?
Is,
I gave it a 7.5, and I feel like it's because I really enjoyed a lot of those kind of like character pairings off and the just like checking in with one another and kind of like restarting the season, not necessarily aside from that opening like action scene, which they kind of go away and come back to. I felt like the rest of the opener was some pretty good character moments, but I can't disagree with a lot of what you said, Paul, but I gave it a 7.5. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I don't like to be negative. I was really looking forward
to
it.
I think, yeah, and I think we're all, so we should keep moving, though, because it's 5:25, so let's keep moving.
Yeah. I'm done.
All right, so you want to take it away, Eric, with our fan score?
Yeah, sure. So now we're going to talk about episode 2, Under the Twin Moons, and Kevin Joseph said, I'd give Under the Twin Moons a 9. A lot more was revealed in the second episode that helped the story come into focus. Burnham's new number 1 reminds me of Captain Shaw from Picard's last season. There you go. Larry Kershka said a 10. It is so realistic. I feel that I am there, and I like that they tie in the past episodes. Paul Herman, who is one of our top contributors, said absolutely freaking loved it, 10 out of 10. Great start to what is going to be such a fun ride. Can't wait to see where they take this story, star-eyed emoji. Stephen Blizzard, also a top contributor, gave it an 8.5, enjoyable, nice setups for multiple character arcs, a silly premise with the avalanche, poorly executed on that, I guess, first episode, I thought, but still very Trek, looking forward to this season. Maddie Riley gave it a 9 out of 10. I think Rayner has something to do with Mok and Lar and in on it. He never catched them at all. Interesting, Maddie. We will find out. Oliver Berlin gave it a 9 out of 10. The episode finally has many classic Star Trek moments again. On the one hand, the protection of a civilian population. On the other hand, the respect for a burial site. Interesting. James Carter gave it a 9 with 2 exclamation points. The action and sweet moments between Burnham and Saru. Daly Seaton gave it an 11 out of 10. That is illegal daily. We're going to average that down to a 10. Loved every minute of it so far. I'm so sad knowing Discovery's coming to an end. I love seeing the Discovery work alongside another Starfleet ship. It's something Enterprise did well with Enterprise and Columbia. The Breen Imperium sounds terrifying. I cannot disagree with you. When they said Breen Imperium, I was like, nope. Thanks, Daly. Barry Lee said, I give it a 6 just because the villains seem a little weak to me, and it had too much of an Indiana Jones vibe, but I do think the Discovery has a new captain at the end of the show. Interesting. And Rebecca Gregory said an 8.5. I loved it. Exciting effects. Sweet scene with Saru and his lady. That gives us a fan score of 8.9, which is 0.6 higher than the first episode. So the fans like the second one just a little bit better, too.
Excellent. So, David, you want to jump in and start this one this time?
Uh-oh. Well,
okay.
Let's just go straight.
Trivia and cadet training.
Oh.
No trivia, Jim?
Okay.
All right. Well, not as much to really pick up on episode 2. Though this episode on the planet had a very much a resemblance to Arsenal of Freedom, TNG, season 1, episode 21, where they were dealing with an arsenal probe, both on the planet and in the atmosphere, of ones that were getting smarter as they went. And then, as somebody just finished walking on my keyboard, is So we are using his Gangula for defense. And this is all the way back to Discovery, season episode 4, an oval for Charon, where wants to sacrifice himself, and in the process loses his ganglia, at least his threat ganglia. Made it very interesting of how much he's been able to start using his ganglia for other things. So now we can move to David.
Woo! All right, so. yeah, this episode definitely was a little bit better than the first one, I would have to say. I do agree with the scoring by a little bit. So, anywho. Let's see here. Favorite part. I actually have to say that for some odd reason, I had no idea what the head statue was going to do once its eyes opened up, and I thought it was going to crawl out of the ground and chase them for some reason. So I thought it was going to be like a giant statue just walking around, and I was like, uh-oh. But, yeah. Let's see here. I don't know. I saw this episode just not too long ago, and I'm starting to forgetting a bunch of stuff about it already. Let's see here. Does someone want to jump in and see what kind of memories can pop up in my head?
Go ahead, Jim.
I thought it was really cool that they mentioned the Promelians again. You guys remember the episode, The Booby Trap, and Chief O'Brien said, oh, I built a battleship in a bottle. That was the Promelian battleship, which on TNG was an ancient race. So in the future, it would be, what, beyond ancient? It would be, I don't know, ancient square, whatever. So, you know, that was cool to see a tie back all the way to TNG again, I thought.
Yeah.
Does that jog your memory at all, David?
Kind of, yeah. The whole ancient graveyard that they stumbled upon was kind of interesting. It did feel a little bit kind of an Indiana Jones situation, with especially the statues kind of looked a little bit of that style that Indiana Jones used, in a sense, in my opinion, I guess. But, to me, this episode probably had better... qualities, a little bit better writing in a way, almost, but to me, it was still somewhat the same. They still were trying to uncover the piece, and also, yeah, I actually remember now that puzzle piece that they found underneath the rock, and then when they stuck it inside that looking circular object, did anyone else recognize what that looked like?
A pizza box?
No. This looks like a galaxy to me. The shape of it was a circle, of course. Pieces of it just looks like it was broken up into like sections of the galaxy that they were trying to piece together. And the last piece, of course, is going to X marks the spot of where they have to go. So are they going to be going to the Delta Quadrant? Are they going to be visiting the Gamma Quadrant? To me, it just seems like they could take it almost anywhere. And that's what's fun about this particular episode, because it's a mystery. And I do like mystery shows. So to me, it's going to be one of those things where if they end up screwing up what the whole premise of the series is supposed to be, and it's going to end up being something weird, like, I'm sorry to say this, but the Bone story did not work for me. Screaming, blowing up that lithium was not a very fun story in this whole series. But I'm just hoping that if they come to the last piece, puzzle piece, is that I'm hoping it's going to lead to something what that guy mentioned is the most dangerous technology the galaxy has ever seen. So is it some sort of creation of life that could probably disintegrate life? Maybe. I don't know. But to me, this is the mystery that I'm hoping that they keep us on the edge of our seats. I enjoy this kind of stuff, so I'm definitely going to give this one, I'll go with a 7 for this one.
You know where they're going, David? They're going to the center of the galaxy to meet God.
There you go. That's that part of the puzzle piece.
Cybok is there waiting for them, a giant floating Cybok head. And he's going to yell, "You!" That's what I predict. Oh, all right. Well, yeah, I enjoyed this one myself. I think that Raynor is a great character. Absolutely a great character. And where Saru and Burnham are on the planet, and Tilly and Adira are trying to figure it out, and who shows up to help them but Raynor. And I thought, you know, this character is really, really growing on me. I'm really starting to like this guy. I think he's like the dipshit from Chicago. I really do. I really like Raynor. You know, and I also like the fact that Saru took a promotion and he's leaving the ship. This is something that, like, exactly, that never happens on Star Trek. How many times did Riker get promoted, you know? But in this particular case, he left the ship and we needed a new first officer. And I thought that was awesome. That is what would happen in Starfleet. You know, you would have movement. So I thought that was great. And when Burnham gave the job to Raynor after he got chewed out and demoted by Admiral Vance, I thought that was was a really great, great, great scene there. And, you know, I don't want to say too much, but overall, I enjoyed it. And I'm so glad to have Star Trek back again. And, you know, I hope that Book and Burnham can work out their differences because they've been apart for so long. I hope they get a happy ending at the end. I'm gonna go with the same thing. I'm gonna go with a 9 on this one. I really liked it. Eric, Tom, Charles, somebody.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I can't argue against Raynor being a cool character. I dig him for sure. What I will say is there are some moments of writing and some choices that were made in this particular episode that I found a little awkward. And I don't know, maybe it's just me, but like when they start to question, when they bring Raynor in after he made the choice on the speedy bikes to blow up the side of the hill and it actually worked out, but then the bad guys got the idea to muck-muck-mow and do it and this and that. Like, that whole line of questioning, you want to talk about unbelievability of Starfleet? Like, the way that they question him about that and the way that they kind of back him into a corner and basically witch hunt him to the point where he gets the demotion and that kind of stuff, I didn't like that scene at all. I thought it was, like, very un-Starfleet the way that they went about it, the way they made Michael Burnham sort of, like, testify against him when she, you know, Vance is like, they're asking you a direct question. You have to answer, blah, blah, blah. That was not the Admiral Vance that I know and love. That was not the compassionate, like, Starfleet that we've all grown up, you know, loving and sort of relying on. So I thought the whole Raynor, like, demotion thing was actually ass backwards, honestly, personally. there are some other character moments that I liked along the way. Like, I, you know, once again, the fact that Saru, like, that Tarina basically, not basically, absolutely proposes to Saru. That is just, like, it warmed my heart like nothing else. I really thought that was sweet, and I really liked the way that they handled that whole scene. There's something about that actress, like, that kind of, like, it's not a sneer that she has on her face, but she's got like this look that she gives that's so somehow, it's like she knows, it's like she's trying not to smile because she's a Vulcan, but she can't help it because she's so in love. It just is awesome. It is like, it communicates her feelings perfectly on the screen. This might be in the first episode. One thing that we didn't really talk about, but it I think plays through to this episode too, is the idea of Stamets kind of, you know, you said in the first episode, they're honoring him because they're dismantling the spore drive. Like, but he has this desire to have a legacy, right? There are a couple of times, I think, in these two episodes where it comes up, and Stamets himself, I think, wants to make sure that his name lives on, you know, 600 years from now. I remember he mentioned something about that, I think, about one of the Romulans. Do you guys feel that that's in character with the Stamets that we've seen so far? Like, would Stamets, as we know him, care about his legacy being around 500 years, 600 years from now?
Yeah, I would say so.
You think so?
Yeah,
okay.
He's got himself.
I think.
Okay, yeah, I was just curious what you guys thought about that. I
have not no sense of that previously at all.
That's what,
like,
he wants.
He's more about his work. I don't think that he's, like, you know, got, I've never got a sense that he's, like, an egotistical guy or that he's, you know, arrogant that way. I mean, he's just, I don't know, it seemed a little out of character to me. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, but look at how he was in the first season. We weren't crazy about him. We thought he was a bit too egotistical, a little too self-centered. And we grew to love him as time went. And I think he just wants a little bit of remembrance of what he's done. Because that spore drive was an incredible capability that will end up getting lost.
Mm-hmm.
He was also very protective of his work, too. So, I mean, to me, that made it sound like he wanted to be remembered. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah, interesting. I just was wondering what you guys thought about that. So, let me see. Other memorable moments? I don't know. There weren't, like, tons of memorable moments. I guess I want to hear what the other Trekspers have to say about this episode, because maybe something like David will kind of, like, get spurred on by your guys' comments. I mean, my initial watch over was that I liked this one better than the first one, but I don't feel a need to go back and watch either one of them again. So I don't know what that means. Maybe I'll up my number after we talk a little bit more, but for right now I'll give this one an 8 and pass the mic.
All right. Well, how about it, Charles? You want to jump in here?
Okay. I was trying to take some notes for, okay, character inventions in there. I love this where Burnham talks to Tilly and said, Tilly, see if you can find some information. We need somebody outside of the ship. Well, let's try Tilly. And Tilly goes in to get the information. And security guards walk in just before she cracks the code. Vance walked in and says, out. And it's like, oh, I'm so close. It's like, well, darn, I'm sorry that I wasn't able to get here fast enough to stop you. Because he wanted to know what was going on, too, and was able to find the information out. Tilly's writing was a little bit weak. There was thought of Tilly's character was a little weak in episode one, where I think in this episode, that scene was a good scene. That we saw more of a Tilly in there. And then we also saw Tilly and Adira. They're all trying to sit there and debate, trying to come up with what's going on with this planet. And then I love how they're so far away through long distance, through, and I'm not sure exactly what was going on, yet the captain, the Rainer, snuck in with a priority message on board right directly to the science station to sit there and get these two going. He'd have been able to track what was going on and get them to realize what was going on, which made me think for Rainier is an interesting character. Okay, yes, he's getting demoted, yet he's still in there trying to deal with the situation. He's not ready to give up, and he's going to be a little hard-headed about it. Yes, I think there was a bit much in the court case, trying to put blame on him. I also think this was a great way of taking him from his captainship and see if we can slip him in as first officer on board ship. And I think he would make a good first officer on board ship because I think he would have that second opinion challenging the captain, as we saw many a times Riker challenging Picard to do what's right. And as we went back to when I was talking about cadet reviews and back to Arsenal Freedom, that just reminded me of probes that were launching and getting smarter as they went and getting trickier. And that pulse to sit there and wipe them out for a short time was good. And then I don't remember where I was reading it, and I think I was reading it from a book about Romulans, the Romulan households, where the front has always, there's a false front in there, and that there's always a back entrance for guests. And I love them using that Romulan interpretation to sit there and find the rest of the puzzle at the bottom. So I'm going to go agree with him on this one and give another 9 on this one.
And that means we get to go to the caboose, and that's where we're going to find Paul.
Hey! Cool. Nice to be back into the mix again here. So, yeah, I mean, as I kind of intimated earlier, it's like I think I definitely enjoyed this second episode a lot more. The flow was a little tighter in terms of moving from one scene to the next. It seems like there was a lot more focus to the narrative here as things are being revealed. I was, like Eric, very fond of Saru being proposed to and his reaction to that. I thought was great. Mm-hmm. You're really rooting for those two. They did a good job, too, of doing what I like to think of, like, you know, as good audience manipulation, right? Because, you know, cop movie trope, you know, right out of the sock drawer. You give your, you know, character a likable moment where he's with somebody and they're talking about, you know, their future together and how great that will be. And, oh, I'm just going to go on one last ride along, right? And then,
what could possibly happen?
Yeah, and you know, he gets a shotgun blast. And, oh, we had there's a bank robbery. Oh, my God, right? So the whole time that, like, they're on the planet together with the statues and the, you know, I guess they decided to go all contemporary, the drones, right, following them, right? It's like you're just convinced there was just all these fake-outs and Saru's going to get killed, right? Because it's just like, oh, no, Saru, we can't have you die. You're going to get married, right? So good suspense out of that. I mean, I'm glad that he didn't, because that would have, I think, been probably not a well-received thing. But I liked all that. The whole Saru dynamic is great. I hope they don't choose to do that to him. I think he's, you know, deserves to have a shot at happiness, as everyone does. But I like that whole dynamic. And I like the idea. It seems it was done with affection to have him get to have, you know, one last field mission, if you will, with Burnham. You know, their camaraderie and stuff is kind of nice, though. It did seem a little odd to me that they would only be two people going down to on something of such importance. And again, it's like it's odd to me that it's always putting the captain at risk when, you know,
oh, yeah.
Flies in the face of Starfleet mindset in the past. So I don't know why they're just ignoring that whole thing, right? The whole "you're too valuable to go, sir," you know. But hey, what are you going to do? But I think in general it was there were less, you know, bombastic action sequences like the crashing the ships into the desert, which I'll never understand, and the giant, you know, sandstorms and whatnot, or the avalanche. It was just like, you know, so we were better served to not have all that stuff. I likewise, it was in the second episode, right, where Rainer helps Tilly and those guys, isn't that right, Charles? It was episode two. Yeah,
yep.
I like that. I liked him coming in unexpectedly as, you know, I guess like a hologram version of himself, right, to assist and everything. He's got an attitude, but I like it. He's being like kind of a strict teacher. It's like, you got to think like that, you know, I'm not going to tell you how to do it, but you have to, like, you know, learn to do it and think how they would think and figure it out that way. So I thought he was really good. He's just such a good actor. I hope that we see a lot of him in this season, because I think he's got a strength that is and a drive and a conviction that's been kind of missing sometimes from some of the main characters.
You know, I can't disagree with you on that. Like, he has that, but like, for that exact reason, how would like a real life Rainer react to becoming first officer to this, like he doesn't even know Michael Burnham that well. And he's already talked about how he's been in the military for, or, you know, in Starfleet for 30 years. He's got a way of doing things. I mean, I guess it gives him a way to show character growth, but like, realistically, that relationship is going to start hostile, I would imagine, right?
Well, I like how they kind of address that right out of the gate too. And I totally agree with you. And to me, that makes more interesting if there's conflict. It's like, for God's sake, we need conflict. We don't want everyone agreeing all the time. And
yeah, it's like
the
opposite of what Roddenberry said, which was no conflict, right? Now
I don't believe
you guys.
I disagree with everything you say.
It's like, here, before we decide what to do with this wormhole threatening the ship, we should all go around and talk about our feelings. I'm like, Rainer's going to be like, fuck that. And he'll probably say fuck that, because he's like kind of he's kind of an unfiltered guy. So I hope that there's conflict with him. I mean, because Burnham gave him a permission slip when she offered him the job. He's like, I'm not going to just be your yes man, words to that effect, right? And she goes, I'm counting on that, right? I need somebody who will question me, right? So I generally like pretty much, I like the fact that we're revealing that it's kind of a treasure hunt, you know, to find this thing, and that it's going to be the intimation is that, you know, whatever this device is that the progenitors left behind, it sounds like it's a biological equivalent of the Genesis device, right? That's similar kind of a thing. You're like, you know, destruction via creation, right? That whole idea. So I think they want a similar kind of oomph threat to that, whatever it is revealed. I mean, whatever many places we go, will it all be in the same quadrant? We don't know. But it's interesting, right? It's fun, and there'll be enough variety to go here and there. What I felt with the writer in me just groaned so hard, though, with the revelation that, you know, whatever her name is, Maul, I think, is somehow related to Book, right?
Yeah, I didn't get that.
She's my second cousin's. There's something, there's some relationship there, right? There's like, he's my only really living relative or whatever, right? Isn't that, that's what I got from the end. He's somehow related.
What's happening is Book is not his real name. It's a title. And he's the fourth. And he learned from his mentor. Well, she learned from, I'm not sure if it's his mentor or I think his mentor before him, but it's someone down the line that the person who trained him, you've got somebody similar position who trained her.
It's Courier family.
So they're a Courier family, so they have both had similar trainings. And I think in the terms of saying for Paul, they are cousins. I think it's a basic term that probably is. They are probably cousins.
But probably not
related. He said
by
relative.
Blood.
He said the word relative. I know. So this the whole idea is, though, that somehow the strange, unknown, odd person that they're meant to be chasing is, like, turns out to be related. I just found, like,
it's very convenient.
So contrived, man. It's just so contrived. Because you know that's all leading up to the whole thing where at some point, you know, he'll have to make a choice. Where do your real allegiance lie to what Michael needs you to do, or your need yep. lose your only member of your family? That kind of thing is just so contrived and corny and just, cringy, man. Cringy
my,
writing when they
but
go
my
for quest, that.
My question is, what he mentioned like some sort of tattoo or scar or something, or birthmark. What, I didn't see a birthmark on her. Did you guys see one?
No, I didn't pay attention to that, yeah.
Yeah, cause he mentioned
because
that
so
the birthmark
was
so unique that it was the only place that he'd ever seen that birthmark was on somebody who he'd never met, who apparently turned out to be a relative. It's like, okay.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's just like I kind of find the whole, you know, I kind of would have not been too sad if we were done with that character, with the book character. I mean, he's a pretty good actor, but what they do with him is really unappealing, right? It's just, I don't know. He's just kind of, you know, puppy dog eyes, lovelorn sidekick forever, and, you know, making unfortunate choices and aligning himself with the wrong people and having split loyalties. Wow. I mean, they kind of worked that to death with him, and I think they're going to do the same thing now in this season. And, oh, Michael, can you forgive me?
Well,
and it's just, it's a lot of melodramatic nonsense.
They did similar things in Picard when they with Beverly Sonnen.
Yeah.
So it's another little loophole that we got to go through, plot hole that we have to work and deal with.
Must be the next gen plot hole stuff.
I will.
Yeah,
it's just
clear. Go ahead.
When I was down at Trek Long Island last year and David Ajala was a guest there, they never intended to, at that point in time, Discovery hadn't been canceled yet. And they didn't intend on bringing him back, so he was done with his contract. And then when they went back and said, look, you know, we want to bring Book back, and his agent was like, well, wait a minute, his contract is over. You need to negotiate a new contract. And so when they renegotiated the new contract and they had to pay him all that money, then they had to put the character in, you know, more episodes than, you know, whatever, you know, whatever cameo they had planned.
Just the finale.
Right. So I think they kind of had to find places to stick him in because they have to pay him anyways.
Hmm.
Yeah. All right. I just hope it doesn't suck. That's all, you know, I hope it's not more of the puppy dog eyes and the mooning and the, you know, Michael Burnham smiling at him and then pulling back and, you know, being, you know, really connected in front of the crew and just like, oh, and I don't know. It just sometimes it's a little cringy, and I just wish you know, it just seems odd to me the way they handle it. So, but I mean, this is, I think that was just my least favorite aspect of the episode, really. But on the whole, I think this is a better step in the right direction. I'm curious to see where it goes. I would give this one a 7. An optimistic 7. I'm giving it a 7 out of hope that it is that it's optimistic and that it's going to head in the right direction, and there'll be less nonsense and more, you know, good writing and strong character work. And please let Rayner just be a strong antagonist. I'd give the guy a lot of scenes. Because he's a Callum Keith Rennie, man. He's a good actor. He's hardcore. So
I guarantee he's dead before the end of the season. Guarantee.
No.
That's what they're going to do. They set up these characters that you love, and then they're going to kill them because they love to activate your emotions to the maximum effect. Guarantee he's going to die.
I don't know. We'll see, man. But I hope it's not the kind of thing where you find out that he's like, you know, the secret bad guy, and he ends up betraying everyone.
I'm your mother.
Rich mask off.
Can we quickly
take
away
with it too? Not for you, damn cadets.
Right.
You know. So, but so we're optimistic. I hope it continues on. We got a new one tonight. I haven't even watched today's yet, so I can see what that is and check it out. Just been way too busy, but I hope it's good. I want it to be good. And I think that's it. So give me a 7 on this one, friends.
Yeah.
And,
so can
we'll
we quickly all theorize what the treasure or whatever they're looking for could be? Just a really quick like guess of what. Could, so like in the future we'll be like, aha, you were right, or you know whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a DeLorean, and I think Christopher Lloyd. Yes, Christopher Lloyd inside.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, I mean, it's hard not to talk about, like, the creation of all kinds of life and stuff and not think about Genesis devices. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess I'll throw my hat in that, like, ring and say, you know, maybe a Genesis device connection. I will say that I did like that episode of TNG back in the day, but what TNG couldn't do back in the day is kind of follow up on that, which I think maybe this is trying to do. You know, it's like, In the TNG episode, all the different races are like, hey, guess what? We're all related. And then they just go back to living the same way that they
cousin.
Were always living. Yeah. So I feel like maybe there's going to be some more, like, I don't know, connections that I think pull that out of the woodwork here this season.
And see, that's what I'm a little, you know, I think that might be where they're going. And is because that was the whole thing, right, Eric? Is it's like, oh, we're all sort of related because we all kind of were spawned from the same,
right?
You know, the commonality of some kind of piece of our DNA, right? So I'm worried that they're going to be like, that's the ultimate big bad reveal, is that in the wrong hands, this could basically not just eliminate one species, but it's some kind of thing that if turned on backwards or whatever, could eliminate all species and it could destroy all life. And because they tend to want to have these, like, you know, they can't just have a Bond plot or like a bad thing happen, right? They tend to, on Discovery, the entire universe needs to be threatened, right?
Totally agree with you. And I think that's why I found that first episode kind of refreshing, was because it felt like the plot was suddenly, oh, okay, we're looking for this thing. We don't really know what it is yet, but it isn't necessarily, you know, going to blow up everything all at once.
Yeah, I mean, it's great if you can, like, okay, the sun is about to go nova, we got to evacuate the people off this planet to prevent that from happening, those kind of things. Hey, we got to prevent this guy from, you know, going back in time and causing problems, those kind of things. It's great. But they always got to go for the entire fabric of the universe is in peril, and it's just – their reach exceeds their grasp in terms of their ability to, it's just like, you can't just do that same thing every single season. Right. It's just like, you know, so I hope they're not being too grandiose again. Right. And I hope it's relatable. You know, I'm still waiting for the Star Trek that brings back the Doomsday Machine. Right. That's what I want. I want to see, like, you know, a whole, you know, the planet of the Doomsday Machine.
We're
Well, I was going to say, relative to what Paul was just saying, like, Paul, so I felt like in some ways that was what Discovery Season 4 did. So it started with the DMA and stuff and, you know, another, like, world-ending or galaxy-ending thing. But in the end, the resolution of everything in the end was all about, like, communicating with this other species and, like, understanding and that sort of stuff.
They ended it beautifully.
Right? So there's there's precedent for, like, an arc where they kind of, like, start you with your hair on fire and then kind of, like, end in a reasonable way. This one started with your hair a little bit less on fire, so hopefully that, you know, we won't all get, like, adrenaline hangovers, you know, during the season like we did
in some of these
other seasons.
Oh, my God. I do want to echo what Jim said, though, is, you know, it's just like, I sometimes seem like such the get off my lawn Star Trek fan, right? I'm all cranky and I'm like, you know, I tend to be, you know, devil's advocate and a complainer, but God damn, it is good to have some Star Trek back on. I mean, it really is. It's just sitting down on a consistent night of the week and you know it's there and it's a new story you haven't seen before. You may not love it all the way through, but there's some new little piece to the giant quilt that is Star Trek and that mythos. You're getting to add another stitch to it every week, and that is lovely. And I don't know. It's just I have a lot of affection for these characters. I hope the writers can send them on their way with, you know, you know, the right amount of sentiment and the right amount of, like, a classic story, and I would be really happy. But it's just great to have it be back. I'm eager for more when this thing wraps up, that's for sure.
So, Charles, what do you think it might be?
I'm thinking the same lines as Eric. I'm thinking back to the original episode and thinking it's something keying, tying of the species together somehow. And maybe the device that can harm people. And we need to prevent people from using such a weapon.
Yeah. So, Jim, did you want to get a serious answer in there?
Well, I'm telling you, it's the Borg. Everyone's been complaining about the birth of the Borg, and we're about to see it. These are the pissed off progenitors that didn't want to see the galaxy see the way they. They were all ticked off and said, well, you know what? We're going to throw a monkey wrench in your whole plan, and we're going to create cybernetic life forms, the Borg. So take that and smoke it. And that's
okay.
It.
Go.
So that's similar to my theory, too. But, okay, here's one thing that all throughout Star Trek, Voyager, I don't know if Deep Space Nine did it or not, or even if the original TNG, the original TOS ever did it, but I believe TNG mentioned it and Voyager mentioned it, but do you guys remember at all what device that they were super afraid of that could destroy all life all at once?
Well, it was. Are you talking about the Omega particle?
The Omega particle.
The thing the Borg was looking for.
Yeah.
And I honestly think that might actually be what it is. Or it could just be a Q device. I don't know. But
well, remember, we actually talked about, we thought... one of these seasons of Discovery, we thought Omega particle was it, or it was Picard season two. We thought that they might get into the Omega particle stuff, but they didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also the burn was, I thought we were going to be the Omega particle.
We wanted to come back around to Omega particle. It's clear this podcast loves that concept.
Well, that's my theory, but yeah, I think we're all in agreement that it could be the same thing, Joe.
Sure.
Well, we do have the Red Directive, which we have no idea what that is. We've never heard of it before, but there's been seven of them, though. So,
Oh, is that what they said? There's been seven of them?
Yeah, because
well,
Rainer's, I've lived...
The seven that Rainer's dealt with.
Oh,
yeah,
30 years or whatever.
So. All right, guys. Well, are you ready for some Star Trek birthdays?
Woo!
One more question.
There we go.
I'm begging you. Can we ask one more question? We have time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, guys, we have to deal with this because it's a big thing. It's weird to me. I want to find out about it. It's keeping me interested. What is going on? Who is David Cronenberg on this show?
He's COVID. That's all you need to know.
He's COVID, yeah, but who is he? Is he like, is he the villain? Is he who really wants to get a hold of the technology? Who's behind the scenes? Is he an android? Is he from the future? He's just, why does he wear eyeglasses? I mean, one of the big central mysteries of this season is who is COVID? He doesn't go on the trip. He doesn't go, he stays back behind at Starfleet. But I was like, but he has the big thing, and he has the little, you know, keychain thing he gives, the infinity symbol. Very mysterious, goes off in, like, his weird futuristic version of, like, the Apple Store version of the Cone of Silence. It's, like, it's totally bizarre. You know, it's just like, you know, here's a place where we can talk where no one can hear us, but I'm going to talk the same way. It's just, I love David Cronenberg movies, so I've always been, like, a fan of the guy, but I'm just like, it's so bizarre that David Cronenberg is taking a job as an actor on Star Trek. It is just crazy to me. It's really interesting. Any theories, gentlemen, about who's really
he was first
the
introduced
bad guy?
He was first introduced into season four, right?
I think so, man.
Season,
or maybe even in
season three.
Okay. Yeah, he's been a mystery since then. I have no idea. I've always thought he was part of Section 31 with the whole thing that they're making coming up, but I don't know. That's my take on it.
I mean, I've always assumed that he is some, like, head or, like, a higher up in Starfleet intelligence of some kind. Like, he gives off that intelligence vibe. He doesn't want you to know anything about
32?
Why he's... Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's Section... I don't consider, like, Section 31 intelligence. I'm thinking more like, you know, I don't know, FBI versus like CIA.
The CIA, Mrs. Lampert.
Yeah, if the CIA is Section 31, then he's the FBI of Starfleet. What I am interested in is that he does, if I remember when his character was first introduced, he did seem to make a couple of comments that seemed to be a little old-timey. And so I am, like Paul, interested in the fact of, you know, maybe he's a time traveler, maybe he's incredibly old, maybe he's not human, you know. But I don't know. I've always just gotten a Starfleet intelligence vibe myself, Paul, personally.
Well, okay. I think he's going to be one of the central mysteries of this season. We probably won't know till the very end, I'm guessing. But it is fascinating. I'm very curious about him. He seems like he's positioned in this season to have a bigger role.
George, he knows about the time war that went on with Archer. I mean, this guy has his fingers on the pulse of everything. He knows everything about he knew about Carl. I mean, this guy knows everything. So
yeah,
you're right, Paul. He has a lot of information.
He's a water cure.
Yeah. Interesting.
Sorry, I just had to get that out.
Well,
it's been on my mind. I was just like, appreciate it. So.
Okay, what if he's sort of the, I forgot which century we're in right now, the 20.
We're in the 32nd.
We're in the 32nd
century. Maybe he's the 32nd version of Q. Maybe he is a Q in a way and has his knowledge of the past, because maybe he's been around that long.
I guess anything is possible.
He's Carl.
I think he's Cybok myself.
Maybe he's Carl's brother.
Carl's
brother,
there you go.
Cousin.
He's the brother of the Guardian of the Guardian Galaxy. Guardian,
yeah.
Time Guardian, what do they call the things?
Guardian of Forever.
Guardian of Forever.
All right. Well, before we run out of time, let's get to our Star Trek birthdays.
That was not a Klingon song.
Okay, we always start off our Star Trek birthdays by remembering those members of our Star Trek family who, sadly enough, are no longer with us. And for that, we turn to Eric.
Jim, our first remembrance this week goes out to actor Norman Snow, who we lost just back in 2022 at the age of 72 years old. He's the actor who played Torin in the Next Generation six-season episode Rightful Heir. But Snow's probably best known for playing the evil Zur in The Last Starfighter, a great movie from 1984. And he appeared in a handful of other films along the way, like The Europeans and Manhunter. But Norman Snow, great actor in that six-season Next Generation episode. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday as well to actress Joan Swift. She is the actress who played Aurelian Kirk in the TOS first season episode Operation Annihilate. Swift also made several appearances on such television shows as The Lucy Show and the Jack Benny program. She also made several guest appearances on shows like I Spy, Bewitched, Lucy Gets Lucky back in the day. You get the drift. Joan Swift. Lost back in 2016 at the ripe old age of 83 years old. We do miss her, and happy birthday to Joan. Happy birthday as well to actor Kenneth Welsh. Kenneth Welsh, also lost just back in 2022, was an actor who portrayed Senna Tal in the Discovery third season episode People of Earth and Forget Me Not. Welsh was well known for playing the villain Wyndham Earle in the second season of Twin Peaks back in 1990. He also portrayed President Harry S. Truman in the 1995 movie Hiroshima. Lots of other movie credits, like all over the place. This guy was in Crocodile Dundee movies and The Day After Tomorrow and some superhero movies, and he was on X-Files. So great career for Kenneth Welsh. We do miss him. Happy birthday and lots of love and remembrances going out to him. Happy birthday as well this week to Sharon Acker. She's the Canadian actress who played O'Donna in the TOS third season episode, The Mark of Gideon. Acker was a regular on the soap opera Executive Suite back in the mid-70s and appeared on lots of television shows from that era as well, like Mission Impossible and Gunsmoke and all the sort of usual suspects there. Also a couple of TV movies along the way and did some work with John Colicos as well. So Sharon Acker, born in 1935, lost in 2023 at 87 years old. We do miss you. Happy birthday to Sharon. Happy birthday as well to Kevin Peter Hall, lost way too early at the age of 35 years old. He's the actor who portrayed Lavore in the Next Generation third season episode, The Price. Hall had originally been considered, believe it or not, for two of those regular TNG roles. He was considered for Data and also for Geordi LaForge along the way. And if you don't know Kevin Peter Hall, well, you probably know his height. 7 feet 2 inches tall, one of the tallest actors ever to perform in any Star Trek movie or television series. Often got him that, you know, role as the tall guy. He was in Harry and the Hendersons as the Sasquatch back in the day. He actually was the Predator, guys. The end in both the original movie and in Predator 2. So Kevin Peter Hall lost way too early, I think due to some medical complications due to related to his height and his heart, if I remember correctly. So happy birthday to Kevin Peter Hall. And last but not least, we're definitely saying happy birthday this week to someone who was kind of introduced to Star Trek in the beginning and then sort of went away and then had a big comeback at the end, and we miss her a lot. Grace Lee Whitney, we lost back in 2015 at 85 years old. She's the American actress, of course, who portrayed Yeoman Janice Rand in the TOS series. You know, originally she was only in 8 episodes. She was actually written out after 8 episodes for a variety of reasons, you know, depending on which biography you read. Roddenberry later apologized for her dismissal and said it was one of the, quote, dumbest mistakes that he ever made, which I think is kind of cool. She returned to her role years and years later for several cameo appearances, including a Star Trek Voyager episode, Flashback. She also was in several fan films along the way, which you can go and check out. So just cool that she kind of like went away and then kind of found a second, you know, a second life as Janice Rand. I think we all loved her in that role, and it was fun to see her in things like the motion picture when that came out, right? She did some side work with other Star Trek people with whom she wasn't in Star Trek, like Jeffrey Hunter, and then, you know, also had a lot of other television appearances and stuff to her credit. So Grace Lee Whitney would have had a birthday just here coming up on April, or just this past birthday, April 1st. She was born April 1st, 1930. Happy birthday, Grace Lee Whitney. We love and miss you. And Charles, I'm going to pass this flaming birthday candle over to you, buddy.
Oh, thank you, Eric. I got a couple, few generic birthdays and a couple of good birthdays. Let's start off with a happy birthday to Carol Selman, actress who played Urena in Star Trek's Next Generation first season episode, Code of Honor. Happy birthday, Jacqueline Joan Kim, actress who played Ensign Demora Sulu in Star Trek's Generations. Happy birthday to Casey Biggs, actor best known for his portrayal as Damar in Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
We love you, Damar.
Yes, we do.
Happy birthday. Now, good birthdays. Happy birthday to Ed Spellers. Ed, you're part of this week's conversation about what we think of the future, what we think could be happening in Star Trek Discovery. Happy birthday to Mark Alamo, who played Gul Dukat in Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And happy birthday to Adriana Holmes, actress who plays Admiral Robert April in Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Definitely looking forward to seeing more of his character show up. So, Paul, who's on your list?
Thanks, Charles. Appreciate it, man. All right. We have got them all here. So, first of all, we got a little name repetition here. We're going to say happy birthday to actor Kenrick Green, who played Michael Burnham. No, not that Michael Burnham, but Mike Burnham, the father of Michael Burnham, our Michael Burnham, on the Discovery episode Perpetual Infinity. He also voiced Mike Burnham on the animated Star Trek short treks, The Girl Who Made the Stars. So, of course, Michael Burnham was really named after her father. So at some point, somebody should call her Mike. Maybe that'll be the last scene of the final season. We'll see. Hey, Mike. Happy birthday to next-gen luminary Jennifer Hedrick, who played the recurring role of Vash in the Next Generation's third and fourth season episodes, Captain's Holiday and Cupid, and the Star Trek Deep Space Nine first season episode, Q-Less. So a very common recurring actor from all things Trek in those aspects there. Happy birthday goes out to actress Lindy Booth, who played Alora in the Strange New Worlds first season episode, Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach. And then we got a couple of real home runs here, friends. Super exciting, especially for this next gentleman who I'm a huge fan of, the great, legendary, bombastic, gentlemanly John Rhys Davies, okay, who on Star Trek, we acknowledge him for playing the holographic recreation of Leonardo da Vinci in Star Trek Voyager's third and fourth season episode, Scorpion and Concerning Flight. I just can't say enough about what they did with that character. He was a great sounding board, the idea of having one of your idols, which, you know, Janeway's, right, be available as a sounding board for you to, wrestle with, problem solving was so great. And he just embodied that historical figure so well and brought such gravitas and humor together. John Rhys Davies is just a remarkable performer. He's been in so many pictures and so many shows, it's just preposterous to even try and scratch the surface. I mean, I think the two most indelible ones that come to mind for folks are, of course, in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, he is Gimli. All right, in all of those pictures, right? I mean, just he's Gimli. There you go. And and then, of course, in Raiders of the Lost Ark and subsequent Indy. I'm so pleased I'm not dead. He was Sala, man. I mean, just the most likable human being ever. Sala, you just can't help but love him, man. He's just so, so great. Bad Dates. You know, he's just absolutely wonderful. Done a ton of voiceover work, and been in just a jillion genre and non-genre pictures. He's just, and from what I have seen, I've never met the man, but the way he seems to interact with fans at conventions is just delightful. He's just like, just very demonstrative and fun, and just seems like a great guy. So it's so perfect that he's also a really classy aspect of the Star Trek universe. So love those episodes where he's gets to act opposite Captain Janeway. Pretty amazing.
Whoa.
I don't know what that was, but that sure as fuck wasn't me. Let's just make
sure.
That was
really
that
weird,
know,
guys.
Whatever that flatulence was.
Was that Charles Cat?
At an inopportune moment.
That
was not me, okay? I just want that for the record.
Warning, this is now PG-13.
Jesus Christ, I don't know what that was, but it sure wasn't
me. I think farts are PG, the humor. I think we're okay.
Okay.
Oh, God. All right. Well, let's save him for, save him for another second. I beg you. And finally for me, I'd like to wish a very gracious happy birthday, an enthusiastic happy birthday to the lovely and enchanting Marina Sirtis, English actress, best known for playing Counselor Deanna Troi on Star Trek The Next Generation, and continued on with that character in at least four Star Trek films, as well as, a plethora of episodes of Voyager, the series finale of Enterprise, episodes of Picard,
and an episode of Lower Decks. I just think she's great. She's had all kinds of challenges in life to contend with, and I think that as written out of the gate, wow, Deanna Troi was just a thankless role, man. Really, really rough. And she, over time, found a character there and really humanized her and made her very likable and stronger and kept insisting that she not just be, you know, the woman and really turned it into something just lovely. So, Marina Sirtis, we salute you. It's just absolutely great that you've continued to continue adding to this character over time and do such a great job. So happy birthday to all of our Star Trek luminaries, and I'll pass that candle over to Jim.
Well, I don't have a lot, but I've got some good ones. We want to say happy birthday to Sophia Boutella, the Algranian actress and dancer who played Jayla in Star Trek Beyond. And my final two, are Klingons. We want to say happy birthday to Philip Morris, who played Cadet Foster in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, and Remtella Khan in Deep Space Nine's six-season episode Rocks and Shoals, and John Kelly in the Star Trek Voyager six-season episode One Small Step. But we're going to remember him from playing Thopax in the fifth-season DS9 episode Looking for Parmok in All the Wrong Places. Great episode. And finally, on my list, another Klingon, we want to say kapla to Rick Pascione, who played Toral, son of Duras, in Star Trek Deep Space Nine, fourth season episode, The Sword of Kaelas.
That's
that,
the other
friend,
Toral, not the other ones. That's the other Toral. There's many Torals.
this is the Toral that Worf wishes he had killed when he had the chance.
Exactly.
But he did. But we do have a caller on the line, though.
Woo.
Yeah, let's see. Good evening. Thank you for calling Trek Talk. And what's your name and where are you calling us from tonight?
Hey, Jim, it's Ryan. How are you?
Hey, what's up, Ryan?
Not much, man. Just been enjoying the show.
Good, good. We haven't heard from you in ages.
Yeah, I've been dealing with a lot. So
cool, man. It's good to hear you. It's good to hear your voice again.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Have you been enjoying the show?
I have, and it's followed along with a lot of what I've been thinking, except for the map.
Oh, the map?
I think it's a complete map of the galaxy, so they can go everywhere they want.
That could be.
Oh, it's going to plug into the spore drive. Yeah, that kind of goes along with Charles' idea, or whoever it was who was like, are they going to go to the gamma? Are they going to go to the delta?
Yeah, that was me.
Was that? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Go to the end of the galaxy and find another one.
or Jim's idea of, well, Jim's guy went to the center of the galaxy, but then it was V'ger who went to the edge of the galaxy, right? So maybe it ties in with TMP.
Good.
I guess we'll have to wait and find out.
Maybe it's a different galaxy, because then in season 4 they went to a different galaxy.
I don't think we've been outside our own galaxy yet.
I thought in season 4 they went to a different galaxy in Discovery.
I don't know. Maybe I forgot.
Yeah, that's what the whole DMA was all about, because the aliens were coming in and, like, mowing the grass of our galaxy.
Oh, yeah, through the anomaly or whatever. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Interesting.
I mean, they've been through time, they've been through mirror, they've been through... Where haven't they gone?
That's true. It's great to hear from you.
My living room.
My living room, yeah. it's great to hear from you, Ryan. Absolutely.
So, like I said, it's going to be an interesting series. I think they're going to definitely toy a little bit with this, but it's definitely going to pay off for somebody.
Absolutely. For sure. And I forgot, what was our fan score for Under the Twin Moons, Charles? I forgot to get that.
It was 8.9 fan score, and ours was – yeah, go ahead, Charles.
It was interesting because I think the host had 0.9 stuck in their heads, because we were 9/10 below the fan score for episode 1. The fan scored 8.9. We were, again, 9/10 below. at an 8.
Oh,
there you go.
Okay.
0.1 shy of 7 of 9.
There's a 0.9 variance.
0.9 variance. All right, guys. Well, with that, we need to wrap up the show. Another show has come and gone. And I just want to say thank you to Paul for hanging out and Trek talking with us tonight. Thank you so much, Paul.
It was my pleasure, man. And so next week, we're off to the episode that premiered tonight, right? Is that what we're doing?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
We
begin that cadence. Yeah, I'm sorry to be late today, but great to be able to join in the conversation.
It's great to have you. And also, thank you to Charles for talking with us. Thank you, Charles.
Oh, thank you. After what today was like, I need to talk some Trek.
And, of course, thank you to David for hanging out with us as well. Thank you, David.
Of course. That was really fun. Discovering new things.
Discovering new things. Tribbles. We got to see Tribbles again, which is always cool. And, of course, thank you to Eric for hanging out with us as well. Thank you, Eric.
Absolutely. Thanks, gents.
And thank you to Ryan for giving us a call and saying hello. It's been a while since we've heard from you. Thank you, Ryan.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, saying to everybody, please stay safe and be good to each other. We'll be back again, same bat time, same bat channel. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Live long and prosper.
Good night, all.
Night, all.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.
Reached the Q continuum. We are unable to get to the phone right now because we are busy living in a plane of existence your feeble mortal minds cannot possibly comprehend. Furthermore, it's pointless to leave a message because we, of course, already knew that you would call, and we simply do not care. Have a nice day.